This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehis Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
the past week has seen Gambian President Yahya Jammeh's rhetoric grow increasingly defiant and hawkish as his government clamps down on dissent.
That's VOA's Ricky Shryock reporting from Dakar. Details next.
Also, dry weather and strong winds are being blamed for the wildfire that has destroyed part of South Africa's famed wine region.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story: the past week has seen Gambian President Yahya Jammeh's rhetoric grow increasingly defiant and hawkish as his government clamps down on dissent. Ricky Shryock has more from Dakar.
Gambian President Yahya Jammeh has continued to dig in his heels with less than 2 weeks to go before the scheduled inauguration of President-elect Adama Barrow. Jammeh has shut at least three private radio stations and, according to local news sites, authorities have arrested people wearing T-shirts with the slogan, "Gambia has decided," a known statement of Barrow supporters. The head of the Electoral Commission fled to neighboring Senegal after Jammeh said in his New Year's address the elections chief had falsified results. Jammeh added that no one would cheat him. It was seen as a veiled threat. The Senegal Regional Director of Rights Group Article 19, Fatou John Senghor, says activists still hope for a peaceful transfer of power.
You see, it has been very clear that after the reversal of his decision, he targeted openly the Electoral Commission. And after that, he sealed their office. And all those days, this institution was not functioning. So you never know also what the security apparatus is capable of doing in such difficult situation.
The Jammeh government has been accused of numerous rights abuses during its 22 years in office, including arbitrary arrest, torture, and forced disappearances. The U.S. State Department Human Rights Report said officials routinely used various methods of intimidation to retain power. Jammeh initially accepted defeat in the December polls, but reversed course, calling for new elections. But the international community has recognized Barrow as the winner. West African Regional Bloc ECOWAS put its standby force on alert, with Senegal at the lead. Jammeh hit back in his New Year's speech, saying an ECOWAS deployment would be a declaration of war. But the regional approach appears to be negotiation, and Senegalese President Macky Sall says military intervention should be a last resort. The founder of West African citizens think tank Gil Yabi says there may still be a path to a peaceful exit.
I think it is true that Jammeh is a very special person, and it is difficult to imagine traditional diplomatic pressures having some impact on Jammeh. But I think that when you think about pressures, it's not just about official threats or traditional diplomatic ways. I think it is also about changing the calculation of the people who are around Jammeh and the military leaders of the country. The objective of ECOWAS could be to make them change their minds by making very clear that Jammeh will not stay in power.
This week, Gambia's army chief reaffirmed his support for Jammeh in a letter published in a pro-government newspaper. International military historian at the University Felix Ufwe Boigny in Abidjan, Arthur Banga, says the Gambian military would likely be no match for ECOWAS forces.
Mais ce serait pas, ce serait un très mauvais signal et pour la CEDEAO.
He says hopefully it will not come to that. He says it would look very bad for the ECOWAS region and democracy in general if Jammeh is still in power 2 or 3 weeks from now. Ricky Shryock for VOA News, Dakar.
The new year has brought rising tensions in Italy between sub-Saharan African migrants and local populations. At the same time, the arrival of winter has not stopped migrants from trying to make the perilous Mediterranean crossing from North Africa to Italy. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following developments. From Rome, she spoke to VOA's Jody Capua first about this week's riot at two migrant centers.
Well, it started in a centre in Kona, not far from Venice, when a woman from the Ivory Coast collapsed and died there on Monday. And the migrants at that centre felt that the authorities took far too long to respond to her problem and could have saved her life. And so they rioted and set various pieces of furniture on fire. They blocked the centre and basically held the staff under siege there, about 25 staff members, until police intervened. And we also saw a separate riot at a migrant centre in Verona. Now, around 100 migrants have since been moved out of that Kona centre. The migrants are saying that one of the reasons why they rioted is because they're being forced to live in very cramped conditions, crowded centres, beds right on top of each other, without enough hot water, and really being kept in very poor conditions. But as you can imagine, it's provoked a much broader debate about migrants in Italy.
Now, I also understand there was some violence in Naples regarding three Senegalese immigrants.
Yes, this is quite shocking. Yesterday, we saw a shooting in the centre of Naples, the historic centre, which sounded like, at first, a random attack where a person fired several shots. Three Senegalese street vendors were injured, and also a 10-year-old girl who was passing by with her father. They all received hospital treatment, and none of the injuries were life-threatening. But it seems to be centred on some sort of extortion racket. As you may know, the Naples Camorra branch of the mafia is very strong in Naples and are known to demand extortion money, and perhaps the Senegalese had resisted that. That seems to be what the media is reporting. But it also indicates some of the tension for some of the African migrants who are trying to make their way in Italy, trying to make money, and confronting these kind of issues, these challenging issues on the streets of Italy every day.
Now, while all this is going on in Italy, migrants are still trying to get there, right? I understand there have been more rescues on the Mediterranean, even though we're in January now.
It's incredible. We've seen no major slowdown in the number of arrivals, the number of people trying to make their way across the Mediterranean. There have been reports that up to 1 million people are waiting in Libya to make that crossing across to Italy and other parts of Europe. But in the last 48 hours, around 80 people, believed to be mostly Senegalese migrants, were in trouble off the coast of Libya after they set off. They were buffeted by rough seas and ran aground, and around 5 people at least are believed to have died, and others were rescued. Just shows you how very difficult it is and how people smugglers continue to exploit the chaos in Libya that we've seen since the fall of the dictator Colonel Gaddafi.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. She spoke to Joe DiCapua.
Meanwhile, Greek officials are praising government efforts to improve living conditions for about 55,000 refugees. They've been in camps on the mainland, but officials today announced they've made some changes in camp operations and refugee policy. Today, Greece's Minister of Migration met with reporters and visited one of the camps today. Reporter Mariana Karakoulaki is following developments. From the city of Thessaloniki, she spoke with Joe DiCapua about what the minister had to say.
Mainly, he emphasized the success of the Ministry of Migration in winterizing the camps. That was the main part of his announcement. Another part is that he announced that the camps in the mainland right now are going to be changed. Their nature is going to be changed. For example, some of the camps are going to close down. Some of them have already closed down. Some are going to change completely. For example, there are going to be reception camps for new refugees who are going to arrive and will not have papers. Others will become smaller. And that was also a major announcement, basically, because most of the camps at this point have the capacity of around 1,000 people. The ministry's main goal at the moment is to separate the camps for specific ethnicities. For example, in one camp there will be Syrians, in another Iraqis, in another Afghans, so that ethnic conflicts can be avoided, because in the past there were several problems.
Now, you said a number of camps had been closed. I remember when we spoke before, you said that the conditions in some of the camps were very bad. Did those conditions have anything to do with the closing of some of these camps, or were there other reasons?
This is not clear. My guess is that, yes, some of the camps are problematic and they close down because of faith. For example, two camps that are going to close down are in former factories and in areas that are quite polluted, so it's not a place where refugees can stay. Others are not suitable for anyone to stay inside because they do not have rooms or anything.
Now, you said that the camps were winterized. What exactly does that mean?
That means that refugees no longer stay in tents and all of the camps have heating. This is what the minister said, but from visiting several camps, this is not the reality actually, because in some camps, there may not be any tents outside, but there are huge buildings in factories that have tents and they have no doors, for example, and they do not have heating. This is what the winterization of the camps means, that no one stays in tents and there is heating inside the buildings or inside tents.
So it sounds like the Greek government plans to have these refugees on the mainland for a long time.
Yes, actually, some of the camps are going to be permanent, and this was another announcement. They know that the camps are going to stay here for quite a long time because the relocation system takes too long, and the minister actually criticized the way the relocation system works. But at the same time, they emphasized Greece's position on keeping the EU-Turkey agreement. They made it very, very clear that Greece supports the EU-Turkey agreement, and it's completely vital for the European refugee crisis.
Now, speaking of that agreement, after it took effect in March of last year, any refugee who tried to come to Greece was being detained on some of the Greek islands. What is the status of those on the islands?
Those on the islands at the moment can only apply for asylum in Greece. They cannot apply for relocation, contrary to the refugees that are in the mainland. And some of them can apply for family reunification, but their only option is to actually apply for asylum in Greece if they want to stay in a European country, or to go back to their homelands with the help probably of the International Organization of Migration.
That was reporter Mariana Karakoulaki in Greece. She spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Swuhib. 17 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Gambian President Yahya Jammeh's rhetoric grow increasingly defiant and hawkish as his government clamps down on dissent. And the new year has brought rising tensions in Italy between sub-Saharan African migrants and local populations. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Wildfires have destroyed part of South Africa's famed wine region, including the 300-year-old Vergenlegen estate, now owned by Anglo-American PLC. The estate's agriculture manager says fires have destroyed about 40% of the vineyard, which was established by Dutch settlers in the 1700s. Firefighters battled more than 100 blazes throughout the night near Cape Town. Fires are also burning on the slopes above the beach resort of Landuno. Dry weather and strong winds are being blamed for the wildfires. Today is National Bird Day in the U.S., and the Animal Welfare and Wildlife Conservation Group, Born Free USA, is using the day to mark a victory for the African gray parrot. A full commercial ban on buying and selling the bird has been approved at the yearly meeting of CITES, the conference of the parties to the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora. The decision will also bolster the Wild Bird Conservation Act, a law designed by President George H.W. Bush in 1992. It largely prohibits the import of the majority of exotic birds caught in the wild. Adam M. Roberts, CEO of Born Free USA, spoke with me about the impact of the CITES decision on birds traded and sold as pets.
Well, you know, Kim, for many years, Born Free and other groups around the world have been monitoring the global movement of wild-caught birds for the pet trade. And one of the most beleaguered species in international trade is the African gray parrot. We're talking about literally millions of parrots being captured in the wild and shipped around the world for the pet trade. Back in the fall of 2016, the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species meeting in South Africa, a proposal was put forward to list the African gray parrot on Appendix 1. Of CITES, which prohibits commercial trade internationally. And it was a very contentious proposal because there are a lot of governments around the world, a lot of corporations, a lot of individuals that benefit by the commercialization of wild-caught parrots. But after this sort of grueling battle, the species was put on Appendix 1, and therefore, as of now, the international commercial trade in wild-caught African gray parrots is prohibited.
Why was this such a grueling battle and such a contentious debate?
Well, I think you just have these serious vested interests that are trying to exploit African gray parrots, but quite frankly, other parrot species as well, for commercial gain, specifically in the pet trade. And the problem is that right now this is decimating wild bird populations. You've got roughly one-third of the parrot species, more than 300 parrot species, that are threatened with extinction. And while habitat loss and other factors do come into play, it's really this commercial trade for the pet industry that's driving this threat of extinction.
How do birds as pets differ from dogs and cats as pets?
The birds as pets issue is very interesting, and it's why every year on January 5th, Born Free USA celebrates National Bird Day, because we want to call attention to the fact that birds are wild animals. They're not like cats and dogs domesticated over millennia to be companions. And so when we think about having birds in our homes, we have to realize that they are a wild species that have innate natural needs. And of course, they're a flight-based species, so they need to be able to fly to express their biological innate instincts. And of course, in most homes, and almost all homes, I would suggest, they're not able to do this. So this is one of the big problems. And then the other big problem with keeping birds in captivity as pets is that many of them, especially the parrot species, are very long-lived. People will acquire one of these animals thinking they're going to have a companion for life, but the problem is sometimes the birds outlive the humans, and then this becomes a serious drain on humane societies and bird sanctuaries who have to try and either place or rescue and give care to these birds for life. So if people are keeping these animals as pets, they have to realize that they are wild animals and they're very hard to provide for in a way that puts their needs first.
How important are these birds to the African continent?
Well, I think when you're looking at African gray parrots, you're also looking at the instinctual needs of all animals, all wild animals, and they're all the same. They have this vital role in the ecosystem, no matter where the bird is found, whether it's in Africa or in Asia, South America, or even North America. You're looking at a species, birds in specific, that have a vital role in the ecosystem. And as I say, you know, they have these instinctual needs to be free, to be wild, and to be able to fly. And we're trying at Born Free USA to explain to people around the world that birds don't belong in cages. They don't belong in people's homes. They do belong in the wild where they can be admired as nature intended.
If you could talk just a little bit about the features of the African gray parrot.
So the African gray parrot is obviously a magnificent species. They have been kept in captivity for a very long time, and they're very intelligent, these African gray parrots, which is one of the selling features, if you will, that makes them so coveted for captivity. And there have been, you know, really amazing studies with African gray parrots that show just how intelligent they are. Their ability to count and to tell different shapes and to recognize different features of objects around them.
Do you think the banning of the sale of these birds, it will make a big difference in the years ahead?
I think what you've seen throughout sort of the past two decades or so is a gradual shift away from this concept of birds being good pets and people trying to recognize that despite the fact that the bird is one of, if not the most heavily traded pet species in America, that these animals actually do need a level of care that humans can't provide them. And so you're starting to see a real focus on species in need, in this case, the African gray parrot, but also legislation and measures in the United States and around the world to try and curtail the wild pet trade when it comes to birds.
Adam M. Roberts, CEO of Born Free USA, he spoke with me from Washington.
A genetically engineered malaria vaccine has been shown to prevent the disease in mice. The vaccine, poised for clinic trials later this year, has the potential to halt illness and transmission of the mosquito-borne illness, VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
An estimated 212 million people are infected with malaria every year, according to the most recent statistics from the World Health Organization, and 429,000, mostly children in sub-Saharan Africa, die of the disease, which is transmitted by mosquitoes. The parasite that causes malaria, P. falciparum, is front and center of a next-generation vaccine that has the potential to prevent the disease and halt transmission. Researchers at the Center for Infectious Disease Research at the University of Washington in Seattle, in conjunction with the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Center, have developed a vaccine that uses the entire parasite to stimulate a protective immune response. Stefan Kappa is director of translational research at the center. He says researchers weakened the live parasite by knocking out three genes that promote infection after the parasite enters the liver. Kappa calls that first stage of the disease the gateway of malaria infection.
These three genes make sure that the parasite cannot develop to the next stage of infection, which occurs in the blood, which causes all the disease and death associated with malaria.
Normally, after the parasite infects the liver, it leaves the organ to infect red blood cells, where billions of disease-causing parasites are produced. In a study reported in the journal Science Translational Medicine, researchers describe identifying the three genes tucked within the parasite's enormous genome that allow falciparum to enter the bloodstream. By knocking them out, the altered parasite remained confined to the liver, according to Kappa, and the immune system began churning out protective antibodies.
So it infects the liver, that's asymptomatic, so that's okay, and it doesn't cause any specific damage to the liver, but it stimulates your immune system. So it stops right there, and we call it check-in, but doesn't check out.
In a phase one clinical trial testing the vaccine's safety, the neutralized parasite was injected into 10 healthy volunteers, showing that it stimulated a strong immune response without making the participants sick. Investigators then injected mice with the genetically engineered parasites and exposed them to parasites that had not been altered. The vaccine containing the parasite minus the three genes completely protected the animals from malaria, and Kappa says it has the potential to prevent person-to-person transmission.
If you block the parasite in the liver, you do not get disease, but you also don't get transmission of the parasite to the next person because the mosquito has to pick up parasites from the bloodstream. But if the parasite can never make it to the bloodstream, it cannot be transmitted to another person.
Researchers are preparing to test the experimental vaccine in humans later this year to see whether they, too, are protected against malaria when exposed to the parasite. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wahib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
VOA. Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. This is James Bratte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. you can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.